sun has done to me. It seems there's no more fun do me. Why must all the boys act so shy? I have guessed the reason why. I may be as brown as a berry.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative art scene. Some Alberta Hunter there. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I am joined in the studio today by two luminaries of the independent comic scene here in Portland. Becky Hawkins is back with us. Becky is the creator of French Toast Comics. She's the artist behind the Tenants' Rights booklet, Know Your Rights, Don't Get Evicted. She's been a globe-trotting musician and a promoter of children's theater, as well as a virtuoso old-school watercolorist. Also back for a return visit is Barry Deutsch. Barry is the Oregon Book Award-winning author of three graphic novels in the Harville series, as well as the creator of Lefty Cartoons, and a contributor to Dollars and Cents magazine and many, many others. Barry and Becky, great to have you back on Words and Pictures.
Thank you. Great to be here. That was my NPR voice. I promised I'd do it once.
So, let's jump right into this new book that you've been collaborating on. Got to take a breath here. It is a queer, historical, superhero noir comic, and it's called Super Butch. How did the two of you get together on this project?
We met in the comic scene, like, we were in a bookstore at the same time, and he thought, that is a nice stack of graphic novels. That sounds really naughty when I say it. Anyway, and then we...
But it was. It was Guapo Comics. I don't know if you remember them on South
East Foster. Guapo Comics and Coffee.
It was their going out of business sale, so there were lots of bargains. And Becky had this big stack of really good graphic novels. Like, I read all of them, but they were all my favorites. So,
And then luckily for me, you'd been reading comics a lot more broadly and a little bit longer than I had. And I was like, oh, hey.
Which is weird because I'm younger.
That's true. But we had met at a convention once, and I had just moved to Portland, and Barry invited me to kind of a comics gathering where we critique each other's work, and then we probably knew each other and had looked at each other's work for a couple of years in a row really regularly, and somewhere way in there, there was a call for a queer sci-fi fantasy for an anthology, and Barry said, would you like to draw lesbian superheroes in the 1940s? I know you like queer people in old buildings. That was 2013 or 14. And
right, although I originally had the idea probably in the 1990s. I'd read a book called Boots of Leather, Slippers of Gold. And that was by a couple of academics, Elizabeth Kennedy and Madeline Davis. And this is a book of oral history. So they wrote it in the 80s, I believe, and they interviewed elderly lesbians about the bar scene from the 1920s through the 1950s. And there were all these fascinating narratives. And they had such fabulous voices and also fabulous adventures. And they were actually in a situation where they did get into fights. They had to fight to protect their scene from annoying straight het men and from annoying straight het men in police uniforms. And I'd never read such a great setting for a superhero, because it is a community that really needs superpowers.
And if I recall from the documentaries about, you know, Stonewall and the other closeted bars back then, they tended to be owned by mob types, so there was a lot of strictures on what kind of freedom people had there.
It depends on the city. Not so much. Not all of them were owned by mob types. They were owned by people who were who wanted to own a bar and either didn't have the money or didn't have the class. Weren't the right race, weren't the right whatever, to own a bar in the nice part of the city.
Mm. But also the mob types had connections with the cops, so they could pay off the cops at a time when having a gay bar was not something that
Yeah, that I mean, was... whether or not they were mobbed up, they had to be paying off the cops. Right, that's true everywhere. But
So you had some great historical background to this, and obviously you took it to Becky to do the art. So, but you've been collaborating pretty closely on this. I mean, you know, it's funny these days when everybody's connected globally, artists and writers can work together on the opposite sides of the country, the opposite sides of the world. But, you know, it seems like there's still a benefit for, you know, getting together in real life, as the kids say, face to face.
Definitely.
Well, there's nothing like being on GChat and trying to give feedback like, oh, you know, that line over there. No, I think the arm, not the left arm. No, the other left. I mean, it's not easy to give art feedback necessarily.
And yet we do that all the time.
We do that all the time. But Dropbox and extra Photoshop layers are definitely a giant part of that.
Oh, yeah. It's... I should mention one more thing. I said I had the idea in the 1990s. That's all I had in the 1990s. These characters, this storyline, this plot, all of it was co-created by Becky and I.
And the sort of the wrapper for this story is a couple of modern day, like millennials, doing an oral history. Of,
so modern, it's 1988.
Right. Oh, it's 1988, so it's probably Gen Xers then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, it's our generation, I know. But yeah, so there's... So there is. I forgot it was 1988. Now,
no worries.
That's my fault. I tried with the glasses and the shoulders, but I just...
Well, it was just an age logic thing. Right. We wanted people who were already grown ups in the 1940s to still be alive and vigorous at the point when they're conducting the interviews.
Well, so. You know, I mean, it's interesting. I was just talking about our, you know. Our generation, the end of the 20th century. And you both work with kids nowadays. Barry, you give talks at schools about Hereville, and Becky, you work at the Northwest Children's Theater. So, I mean, what do you notice about being a kid these days, especially being a queer kid, versus your experience back in the day, back in the 80s and 90s?
I think it is still very geography-based. I think I was... equally surprised at little kids with dyed hair as I was with, you know, kids explaining that, like, oh, I'm 10, by the way, these are my pronouns now, and can you fix it in the system? I mean, those are both things that I see a lot of in the, you know, children's theater Portland community, and it's great. It was also very surprising.
So this is your opportunity to go back even further before any of us were around and say what things were like in the 40s. And I want to, before we do a reading, I want to set a little bit of the background here. So we have these characters, and there's a great range of characters. And I want to explain the title Super Butch. In the lesbian scene of the time and later onward, there's a, you know, wide range of personalities, archetypes. But people tend to think of femme and butch as being the sort of two most prominent ones. And the main character in this book, Lillian, is kind of switching between the two in her daily life and her evening life.
Yeah, so Lillian is a butch woman. She loves rocking a suit, you know, being dapper, being strong. Strong is the wrong word and kind of loaded. But anyway, these are all things that she can't really express at work. She works in a white newspaper. She needs to... you know, be wearing makeup and wearing skirts and is trying to maneuver in a very male-dominated workplace. So, yeah, she does a lot of switching back and forth throughout the book.
And not just between being butch and femme. Again, the story is set in the 1940s. And, yeah, let's really do a deep dive into some American history. What did it mean to pass back then? And you know, you could pass. There are people who passed as a gender that they were not originally assigned, as a race they were not originally assigned, as a, you know, class.
Okay. Well, in Lillian's case, it's important to understand that it's not a matter of assigned, as if she's trans. She's black. She thinks of herself as black. She isn't passing full-time, as some people did. What she's doing is called 9-to-5-ing. She's passing for the purpose of a job, and when the job's over, she returns to her home or to her social life, and she dresses in a way so that people will perceive her as black. And so this is something that she did. She was originally working for the black newspaper, But she was fired when they found out that she's a lesbian. And fortunately for her, they didn't spread that, or she would have been unemployable in the entire city, which would have been very terrifying for her because it was during the Depression that this happened. But word had spread amongst the black newspapers, and so the way that she continued to be a journalist, which is what she wants, was to begin passing as white. But only from 9 to 5.
And you have some great historical little fun little Easter eggs in the comic, such as, well, one little cameo that happens is a real-life cartoonist makes an appearance in Lillian's newsroom. It's George Harriman, the creator of the popular newspaper comic Crazy Cat, and it's only really become popularly known in recent years that Harriman moved from Louisiana to California, and a lot of people say it's to escape his past as a Creole man, a fellow of mixed race, which was, you know, incredibly common in New Orleans. But then he was able to pass the rest of his life and be a successful mainstream newspaper comic artist. But there's all sorts of little callbacks in the Crazy Cat strip that give little clues, the kind of banjo that Crazy Cat is playing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it was an irresistible cameo because, I mean, Harriman, a lot of people would argue that Harriman is the greatest American cartoonist ever. And he's certainly up in the pantheon. And that he almost certainly was a man passing as white made it irresistible to give him just a little hat tip in this comic.
So let's see. So there's lots of... So the idea in here is there's a lot of people that are having secret identities. So superhero comics have secret identities. But all of these...
Exactly. And historically, in the bar scene, not only did people change on the way to the bar their appearance, change their clothing, get into their lesbian bar uniform in a way, they also had their lesbian bar names because it was desperately important that they keep their real identity secret. I mean, maybe they tell their close friends that at the bar they would use names like, Red or whatever, and very often there would be names that were very popular, so people would start modifying them, you know, Big Red, Fast Red, and it was very superhero-like.
And the both of you came up with this amazing range of characters in the bar Barry, you must have been really happy with the way that Becky differentiated everybody with her artwork. Oh, you both love, I mean, you're both artists, and you both love to do different types of body types, like a wider range of body types than you might find in the typical superhero comic.
Somewhat, I find certain body types easier to draw, same as any artist. I mean, Barry had to literally help me draw a superhero man. Like, the first time, like, he looked like Gumby. Like, I just had not paid attention to that figure while drawing it enough times. And so I got a little email, like, I modified this on another Photoshop layer, narrow hips, wide shoulders, triangular this, like, buff that.
If you haven't grown up being fluent in the language of superhero iconography, the way people draw superheroes is just weird and slightly ridiculous. And actually, I couldn't get Becky to go full-on ridiculous superhero. Like, you know, you didn't go quite for the clothing that somehow fits so much that we could see every fiber of every muscle.
Along with the muscles that don't actually exist.
But, you know, that's okay, because also this is 1940s superhero, and the fetishization of men's muscles hadn't proceeded to its height yet.
Right, and also, these are real superheroes who really live in Turtle City, Pacific Northwest. These aren't those fake superheroes in the comic. That's where I'm coming from.
Well, the book is Super Butch. Let's do a little fun dramatic reading here, and I'd like the both of you to give a little excerpt of what people can expect in this comic.
Okay, so I'm going to be reading Lillian. She is at work, but also we're hearing her narration as an 80-something woman giving some background. So keep up.
All righty.
Herman Hester was editor-in-chief of the Turtle City Tribune and my boss. People called Hester the nicest newspaperman in the city.
Dearie, how many times have I asked you to call me Chief?
I loathed him. As many times as I've asked you to call me Lillian. I've got a Dame Dynamite story to pitch.
Oh, no, I don't think so, dear. Dame Dynamite is a superhero, so that's a crime story. You're on the woman's desk. Yep. When I want a crime story, I got guys like Erwin here for that. You think Erwin could write a goldfish contest story? Couldn't do it. Sweetie, putting you on hard news would be a waste of talent.
I don't want to write goldfish stories forever. Did I mention I hated that man? Because I hated that man.
Listen, I'm a fair guy. You bring me a story no one else could have brought in, then I guess I'd have no choice, right? Right.
I'd get out of kitten and goldfish jail?
If it's a really swell story. But right now I got an assignment for you, with meat on it. You know who Gloria Winslet is?
The mayoral candidate's wife?
She hates talking to the press, but she's coming here for an interview tomorrow. We're talking a big exclusive. I want you to handle it.
Really? Wow, that's... Wait, why am I getting this story?
Because I respect you. The interview's about her dog.
I'm getting some coffee.
Tomorrow at 1 p.m., sweetie.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And we're talking today about the new queer historical superhero noir comic Super Butch with artist Becky Hawkins and author Barry Deutsch. So this is, okay, you've got two of these out. You're self-publishing Super Butch, and it's a story that builds slowly. No spoilers. I won't tell you what happens with Lillian's interview with the mayoral candidate's wife. But it takes a while before even the title character makes her first appearance.
56 pages.
And for impatient readers, maybe this will be a problem. But for readers who enjoy shows like The Wire or Better Call Saul, this just adds to the fun, the building tension.
Well, thank you. I enjoy those shows. Surely everyone does.
So you're self-publishing, and you're thinking, like, you know, at some point this might be of interest to a publisher, but you want to get a little bit more. You want to get a little bit more out there before that happens.
Yeah, it's partly practical. We don't want to go to a publisher and say, "I can't wait to show you what happens in book five. We've got a map of the city." So.
Until that point, where can people find Super Butch, by the way?
Until that, they can find it on our website, superbutchcomic.com. Pages go up once a week. We are hoping to speed that up at some point.
And also, if you're in Portland, there's a great comic book store that carries them.
Called Books with Pictures. You should go there anyway. It's got an amazing collection and a extremely friendly staff who can find you anything.
But please walk in and say, "I want to read Super Butch. Super Butch. Show me Super Butch." Because the staff there would love to hear you say that frequently.
Well, tell me about more of your research together and your collaboration. You did a road trip together, is that right?
That was our first story meeting. I don't know about first story meeting, but it was definitely our only 1,200-mile story meeting.
Our most productive story meetings tend to be when we're stuck in cars or planes together. The one that I think we both remember best is one where we were driving in upstate New York.
We were hitting a couple of conventions. We were in New York City for the Queers and Comics Conference, and then we were going to TCAF, the Toronto Comic Arts Fest, and then making some family stops in between.
So a lot of driving, and my phone was not great at making connections, especially in rural New York. And I was like, "Oh, sure, we'll just depend on Google Maps. I hate reading real maps."
And then I was like, "No, we'll do this the old-fashioned way. I've printed out the directions from the internet, and we'll just, like, remember how many miles it is to each next thing that we have to do." And so that, like, six-hour drive took about 12 hours.
Yeah, and so Becky, who is the only one of us who drives... was going with, you could actually see, like in Peanuts, the little black cloud of anger floating over her head. And I was fearing for my life. But we got so much plotting done.
But yeah, that drive ended with running late, trying to get from New York City to Newark on a Friday afternoon. it was like running late to get the plane. It was messy.
But, you know, if our comic spousehood could survive that, it'll survive anything.
Pretty much.
Well, now this is kind of a book that turns superheroes on their head in certain ways. But, you know, that's not the first time it's been done. We grew up, I mean, again, I mentioned we're sort of late 20th century kids who, when I was a kid, the big comic titles were Doctor Strange and Swamp Thing and Howard the Duck. And it wasn't until years later I realized this was the era when mainstream comics writers had discovered hallucinogens. So they were really kind of upending the tropes. But, you know, who are some of your favorite superheroes?
I mean, when I was a kid, my favorite superhero was Spider-Man, no question. Nowadays, I'm more likely to think of what is... Because, you know, any especially mainstream superhero character, if they're good, it's only temporary. Sooner or later, they're going to reboot it or they're going to fire the creative team and it will stop being good. So, let's see. In recent times, I really like the Vision miniseries. I don't know if you read that. I guess it was last year. It was a really hilarious and creepy series where Vision, who's a robot superhero, decided he wanted to live more like people. He's one of those robots who's always like, I want to become human. So he built himself a wife and two children and bought a house in suburbia, and they tried to fit in. And that's what the miniseries was about, and things went horrifyingly, terrifyingly wrong. And I thought it, Tom King wrote it. I forget who drew it, but it's one of the best superhero comics I've read in the last year. Longer term, I mean, obviously, any superhero comic Alan Moore wrote is a favorite. And he's someone who also does history now and then and puts a lot of research into it. Zop by Scott McCloud. Not Scott's favorite of his comics, but one that's still... I think the best Zots are still wonderfully worth reading. So I lent Becky, just to get a feel of the period, some 1940s Superman daily strips.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm probably going to kick myself afterwards for forgetting some title or another, but Barry had to give me a little bit of Superhero 101 because that was not at all the direction I came from in terms of comic reading. I think my biggest comic influences, one of them is definitely Howard Cruz. I think there's more Stuck Rubber Baby and Super Butch than there is a whole lot of superheroes.
Well, good.
Thanks.
Howard Cruz, Barefoot, is that right?
Yes. Okay. And Wendell.
Okay. Now, I'm going to be a little elastic with the term superhero. So you can be, you know, back in the 1940s, you had, Brenda Starr reporter going around globetrotting and doing amazing stuff, you know. So I will allow that for a superhero, for example. But, you know, I mean, in comics, this was a period of time where comics were really kind of taking off when Super Butch is set in the early 1940s. So it's fun to have that early sense of the tropes, of the characters that are blending in with the real historical facts.
And one of the things that's, I mean, doing the research is always incredibly fun, and we find so many things. And George Harriman is not the only real person who's in this, although so far he's the only real cartoonist that's in it. Although there's Jackie Onassis? What is Jackie's last name? There's one of the earliest black female cartoonists who is able to get published, is going to put a cameo in.
What? Her last name is spelled O-R-M-E-S. I am not sure how to pronounce it.
Okay.
I believe.
But she did some really fantastic work, and I don't actually know if she was a lesbian, but given what we know about her personality, it seems likely that she would have been okay partying with lesbians, whether or not she was gay.
Well, one thing I've learned a little bit from research is that, for one thing, the black community, from whatever it was a lot more open in those times about having partying, you know, straight and queer black people together. A lot of times they would have house parties if going out wasn't safe. And also the music scene was very queer, probably in ways that like we won't even know specifically. There was a New York Times article a while ago where someone only had two records with this one mysterious name on it, and they wanted to find out who this woman was, and like, we can't make up anything as cool as the research that we do. I'm going to throw that out there. They said, okay, we found this birth certificate, and then I guess she moved here, and there's a death certificate for someone with her husband's last name who we don't hear from again. Maybe she killed him and then went on the road with her long-term girlfriend to record blues albums. That seems to be the case. And then she like ended up playing for churches and living a long, happy life in rural someplace, and now two copies of her records exist. Maybe I think I dropped one. I mean, like, there's so much history that is cooler than what we learn in history. I'm going to throw that out there.
So don't read our comic. Just read history
no,
books.
No, no, read our comic too. It's fun. But yeah, every time we actually get into research, we end up finding something like cooler than what we were going to write in the first place.
Well, I was looking into some of the queer jazz and blues artists like Ma Rainey and Gladys Bentley and Alberta Hunter, who we heard earlier. And they had such amazing, if you listen to the songs of the time, I mean, people are used to hearing double entendres about sexual practices and coupling and things like that. But there's also double entendres about all sorts of things that weren't necessarily allowed to be spoken out loud back in the day.
And, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We really, I mean, I say that I wanted room for lots and lots of things, but there's so much we don't have room for. Like when you're talking about how comics were having an explosion during the 1940s, and that's true. And it occurred to me, wait, we've never seen a single character reading a comic book in Super Butch.
Oops.
We really don't. There's like there's a two-page sequence where we're listening to what's going on the jukebox in the bar. That's the main setting for a lot of Super Butch. That is, I think, the only actual music we've had in Super Butch so far. So we really should fix that.
Let's fix that in
the next
scene.
I mean, they'll only add another like 20 or 30 pages. That's not a problem, is it?
No.
So how long are you hoping to make this project last?
Well, the way it's organized, our big long-term plan is that there is to have 5 linked graphic novels. The first graphic novel, if all goes as planned, is going to be in the range of 200 pages, and that's Lillian's story, and that will come to a satisfying end. So the plan, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, here in public, humiliate me in front of thousands, nay, millions of listeners.
It's over, Barry. No.
is to have the first book come to a satisfying end, and at that point, Becky and I can regroup and see where we are. For instance, if the Patreon, have I mentioned that we have a Patreon? We have a Patreon, is doing well enough so that Becky is able to actually earn at least partial living from this and decide what we're going to do next. I'd love to do the whole Super Butch saga because there's so much history yet to be touched. And because Lillian is not our only protagonist in our minds, we really want to get on to telling other people's stories too. But we're at least going to tell Lillian's story and bring it into a satisfying ending and publish it as a square-bound graphic novel.
Now, we have a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask about some of your other projects that might be coming up. You've got the 3 Herville books, and you're taking a hiatus, but we don't think this is the last that people have heard from Herville.
People ask me a lot if I'm doing another Herville book, and Abrams, my super publisher, said they'd be interested. I want to do something else first. I'm currently working on a graphic novel about a armless girl who runs away from home to try and get her runaway dog back.
Ooh.
And that one's really interesting. I've also been doing a lot more political cartoons lately. I increased from doing 6 political cartoons a year to doing 52 political cartoons a year.
Wow. And Becky, so your postcard comics, you rock the old school watercolor, as we mentioned. You don't just use the tablet or anything like that. And you do, this is a thing that I haven't seen anybody else do. Anybody who follows you on social media has seen your postcard comics. It's not a format I've seen anywhere else. One of my favorite particular postcard comics features a scene between you and your partner. You're wondering why she's gazing at your face, and she says, "You have great character design." That's a bit of an in-joke for animators and cartoonists.
Yeah. So the postcard thing started partly because I was scared of digital drawing and partly because I was working on cruise ships as a musician. And I got a watercolor set one time in between contracts, and I was in an art store with my dad, and he kind of like showed me a book of blank postcards and was like, "You could maybe work on these and send them home sometimes," because I didn't call that often. Sorry, Mom. Sorry, Dad. And so it turned into a comic diary that I could then scan and send wherever. And I've been doing that now for probably five, six years. So yeah, you can see that on Twitter or French Toast Comics with an X because I'm that indie, .tumblr.com.
Wow, you're all really right. Edge.
So indie. Yeah, sorry.
Well, the book is Super Butch. It's a queer historical superhero noir series from artist Becky Hawkins and author Barry Deutsch. Barry and Becky, thanks for joining us again on Words and Pictures.
Thanks for having us, dude.
Us once again, where can people follow the story, either in print or online? Tell us the Patreon.
If you go to patreon.com/superbutch, that's where you can support us. And I have to say a giant thank you to the people who already support us on Patreon. It's been the difference between me worrying about bills or not. It's been more time to draw. It's great. So thank you all so much.
All right. You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, SW Conser. Many thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. You can find an archived version of the show later today at KBOO.FM/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture.
You can't tell a difference after dark. They say that gentlemen prefer the blonde-haired ladies. Tell me, am I out of style? Just because I'm slightly shady, wait until I've won ya. And my love drops down upon ya. You can't tell a difference after dark. Yeah, man.